it was really funny in the first service. I was really nervous about being careful not to say the word God. And then, like the hymn, it's in the hymn. So, and I think Presbyterians should be nervous when they come to UU churches because and we're sorry about the Servetus thing. But, if you remember, John Calvin wasn't one of those universalist minds, unfortunately. If you were here at the first service, yes, and you brought Walkman, you can go ahead and put them on now. At this point, we'll be duplicating some things. But thank you for being here. It's so wonderful to see all the children. That's very exciting. Well, we have two readings today. One of the readings comes from the scripture of the Buddhists. And it's a wonderful, wonderful story. I think you'll enjoy that. I don't get to read that one, though. I'll be reading Christian scripture where Jesus confronts Pilate, who is very sure that he understands what religious people are like. He has ideas of what the Jewish people are like and what these this new group might be like. And Jesus is going to challenge him. Pilate went back into the palace and called Jesus. "Are you the king of the Jews?" he asked. Jesus answered, "Does this question come from you, or have others told you about me?" Pilate replied, "Do you think I am a Jew? It was your own people that, and the chief priests who handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus said, "My realm does not belong to this world. If my realm belonged to this world, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to religious authorities. No, my realm does not belong here." So Pilate asked him, "Are you a king then?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. I was born and came into the world for one purpose, to speak about the truth. Whoever belongs to the truth listens to me." "And what is truth?" said Pilate. Those who wish to join me now in a word of prayer. We pause now from all that is artificial and rushed or coerced in our lives. We release for a moment the fears, the worries, the guilt that we may have carried into this day. We leave behind all that is artificial, all that other people have told us we are, all the hopes and fears that have nothing to do with our real lives. We now become aware of the life that pulses within us, and also the life that pulses around us, and these are friends. Help us to spend this time deeply aware that we are nurtured by the river of life. We pray this prayer by every name, by every art, by every talent by which you are honored. You've probably heard the quote by P.T. Barnum that no one has ever yet lost money underestimating the intelligence of the American people. Now, I've always hated that quote, and I've always tried to argue against it, but it's getting really hard. I mean, there isn't a day now that I don't open up the paper and say, "What in the heck?" And that's the word I use, the very word I use as a Presbyterian. What's going on? You know, when did the bozos take over the bus? I mean, it's like, you know, and you meet people and they're very civil conversations, the big red nose, you know, honk, honk kind of thing. Arnold Schwarzenegger is governor of California. I don't know. You know, have I had a stroke? I don't know. I don't know. I have no experience. I had big muscles. Vote for me. And a state full of people said, yeah, that'll do. I mean, it's really, really scary to me. And I'm sure it's probably always been this way. The rich and the powerful get control of information. And then when you pick up the paper, you're reading something that somebody wants you to see. I think it was devastating during the Reagan years when they were able to convince us that the poor had stolen all of our money. You know what I'm saying? I think something really psychotic happened to us when we bought that line. Like, these people have all of our stuff. These people don't have anything. They stole our money. There was even a woman who used to make up stories for Reagan. She was considered herself a novelist, and she'd make up stories about welfare mothers with Cadillacs. And the stories got out, and people just got so incensed. You know, it's propaganda. What makes that important for us as people of faith is, as Voltaire said, any people who will believe an absurdity will commit any atrocity. Think about that. People who will believe any absurdity will commit any atrocity. It's like a stage magician who hypnotizes you. And you would never, say, rob a bank in a chicken costume. But if you're hypnotized a certain way and you think that other people have stolen from you, it's hypnosis. The human beings are the animal that can be hypnotized. We can go into a trance. And woe to the world when we call that religion or patriotism. How deadly that can be. We can destroy others, peasants in another country. You know, Iraq couldn't even beat Iran by itself with our help. Remember that? And then they got the heck, another Presbyterian word, bombed out of them. Then we bombed the heck out of them again. And then we convinced the American people that there's a danger to us. I was reading The Statesman, which is one of the fine newspapers in the world. I'm hurt. And I can read page one, I read page two, I read page three, I read page four. Get to page five, and it says that we're about to lose 25% of the species on Earth in the next 50 years. I say, well, what was the news ahead of that? What is the news that scooped extinction? And I went back, and Terra Toys may lose its, you know, lease or something like that on the front page, which is important, don't get me wrong. If faith means anything, it means caring about our world. And there are many differences in creed, rituals, those sorts of things. But if we don't care about our planet, if we don't care about humankind, then our faith, whatever it is, serves the trance. And if evil has any meaning, then nationalism is evil when it does that. Religion is evil when it does that. Business is evil when it betrays our brothers and sisters around the world. Listen again to this teaching of the Buddha. Believe nothing merely because you've been told it. Do not believe what your teacher tells you merely out of respect for the teacher. But whatsoever, after due examination and analysis, you find to be kind, conducive to the welfare of all beings, that doctrine believe and cling to and take as your guide. What incredible advice that is. Not just be a reasoning being, but reason at the service of compassion. It's real easy for those of us on the progressive side. And I was so grateful when Davidson moved to Austin, because there's now a weirder minister than me in town. I can go to press conferences and look sane. Because you know, it's hard when you see what's going on in the world. It's hard with your heart breaking not to seem strange. This was the experience that Jesus went through. Now here's Pilate. He is an intellectual. He would never step into a place of faith. He thinks he's not been propagandized. But did you know just because you don't go to church does not mean you haven't been propagandized? Do you know that you may have superstitions that are just as debilitating? Right? As horrible as religion can be, and it can be terrible, the Pol Pot and the Stalinists were not religious people. Right? Those same energies can use a lot of disguises to harm us. So Jesus is facing a person who can slit his throat without even talking about it. Pontius Pilate does not need the trial. Are you the king of the Jews? Now, we have to keep reminding ourselves whenever we tell any of the stories from the New Testament that the Jews were not the problem. Fundamentalism is and always has been the problem. Not fundamentalists, but anyone who believes that their tribe is the only tribe that's understood it. Anybody believes that they're taking a document literally has got a very big problem. Right? Because no human mind can understand objectively the essence of reality. We're all subjective critters. We all see from a weird angle on things. And as long as we remember that, we can get along. Many religious people think they're objective. Pontius Pilate, an intellectual, thought he knew who the Jews were, thought he knew who this new upstart was, and says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" That's going to answer his question. Right, he just wants to know about the power issues. And Jesus asks one of those brilliant questions that most Christians never notice. There's all kinds of wonderful things in the New Testament people never wonder. At Christmas, I love that Joseph and Mary weren't married when they checked in the hotel. Right, they're betrothed. But no Christian ever notices that. You know, oh, it's so beautiful. Get the children up close so you can see these people shacking out in the motel. But here's another one. You see when my church let me go for a Sunday? But here's what Jesus does. Jesus says, here's the question, are you the king of the Jews? He says, are those your ideas or is that what you've heard about me? You catch the brilliance of that. Don't you wish we asked ourselves that question more often? Is that you or Rush Limbaugh? Right? Is that you or Molly Ivan? Because the answer to propaganda on one side is not propaganda on the other side. It's a huge temptation. Right? It's an incredible temptation when you hear the ignorance and the hatred that fills the radio airwaves. Everybody's so mad at the liberal media. I've yet to see the liberal media. Where is it? You know, it's all conservatives bashing these people that aren't even there. I mean, Fox News Network is counting Jerry Springer as a liberal spokesperson. I mean, he speaks for me. I don't know about you, though. But how easy is that? You know, to get someone who's just, moved to town and you put them there on the airwaves and that represents the liberal thought. And then you can say you've looked at both sides, fair and balanced. The hardest thing in struggling against fundamentalism is not to become a fundamentalist. It's almost impossible. The people we talk about, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, were people who had mastered the art of not falling into what we struggle with as human beings. They asked the question, is this coming from me or have I been propagandized? Remember the old, is this Ella Fitzgerald or Memorex? How many of you as parents, just your parents, have ever been speaking to your children and say, woo, that's my mother talking to me? Or, oh, that's my dad. It's real scary when you reach out and then you see your dad's hand. You go, whoa! The way out is to break that trance altogether. To do as Buddha is saying. Use belief as an orienting device, but never let it finish the picture for you. Right? You need to kind of remember your address, right? How to start your car. Those are all beliefs. They orient you. But your beliefs should never tell you what another human being is going to be. It should never replace relationship. Christianity forgot that it was a religion of love and became a religion of belief. Truly be a religion of love, we must relate to the other and recognize the mystery of the other. But it's going to take the heart. A temptation to untether your reason and just debate with other people. It doesn't hurt as bad, does it? That's not what Dr. King did. It's not what Mahatma Gandhi did. They put their reason at the service of their compassion. Think if Martin Luther King had just been a good debater and made people look bad. How different it is to say, I have a dream. That's the heart coming through. Reason. Tim Martin has I think he preaches here sometimes, doesn't he? He's from NCC. Great preacher down south. Invite him sometimes. But he has a maxim that I love. Most of the congregation in MCC is gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. They do allow allies, though. But he has a saying. He says, you can't reason somebody out of a position they didn't reason themselves into. Right? Prejudice is a wound. And it comes from fear, frustration. And though we don't surrender the struggle. We don't put up with oppression. We don't cooperate with oppression. The people that are going to save the world are those who are able not to hate and objectify on the other side of the aisle. Like Bishop Tutu says, if we can't hear the cry on the other side, we will never free our people. There's a great line in Steppenwolf as it's coming to a close, although I'm probably butchering it because it's been 20 years since I've seen it. But Steppenwolf is a person very brilliant, but he's lost his heart. And he tries to love another person he can't really love. And she has an affair. And in his agony, he kills them both, as I remember. And he's sitting there at the close of the book in despair, absolute, hopeless despair. And a voice opens up from heaven and says, Steppenwolf, you've committed the unforgivable sin. You lost your sense of humor. Incredible, strange, ironic ending to a book. If we lose our art, then the world has no hope. Right? If reason untethers and gives up on art, then there isn't hope. But if reason commits itself, remember that the neocortex is on top of all that other stuff that we don't always honor. It's psychotic to untether from your feelings and your emotions. When I went through counseling training, they said, never try to debate with a paranoid schizophrenic because they'll beat you every time. But reason in the service of compassion is visionary. Now, in case you haven't noticed, America is moving into a time of great suffering. The violence and oppression that we've visited on the world will come back to us. I do not say that to put my country down. It is a law of the Spirit. But the wheel turns. And the people whose throats we have our boots on now will someday have their boots on our throats. Someday we will grovel at the feet of the third world people. And we will wish that we treated them the way we want to be treated. Do you know to get into the United States, I'm way off text here. To get into the United States, there are 27 countries that get in without a visa. Guess how many of those are people of color? You have to let Japan in, right? Because they own most of us. And Singapore. Now, there's some other nation that I don't recognize, like San Benedito or something like that. But no country from Africa? No Hispanic people are trustworthy? That goes around, comes around. And so people of faith must begin to prepare today for the strength of spirit to bring hope into that world. We still struggle to save our nation. But that's not where our hope lies. Our hope is in humankind. You get a lot more hope for that, right? Our nation is locked on a suicidal course. But the world itself is rising up. The people who now live in affliction are coming to their voice. People of faith will join that song. They will sing beyond their religion. They'll sing beyond their nation. They'll sing beyond their own best interests. And they will be the ones that will build the world of the future. Ask your friends the question, what could we have done with $160 billion if we had not spent it on a lie? What could we have done? Get your friends to imagine. Call upon their art. Don't fight with them. Challenge them. Can you think of anything better we could have done? The death count just reached 500 yesterday. What could have happened in those 500 lives had they not been lied to and sent to their deaths? P.T. Barnum also said this, you can't cheat an honest person. That's the flip side of the sucker thing. If we won't sell one another out, then we can stand up to the propaganda. It's when we're willing to trade the poor away, people of color, people who are different, GLBT, people with disabilities. When we stop selling each other out, we become invincible. And that's the message we celebrate tomorrow on Martin Luther King Day. Don't let current events rob you of your calling to speak your truth to the world. I want to close with a saying by Solzhenitsyn. It's a little bit long, but it's wonderful. He just won the Nobel Prize, I believe, for literature. And as he's getting ready to speak, he remembers the nameless, countless faces of other artists in the Soviet Union who were destroyed. Because the tyrants always know to go after the arts. They know to do that. Because there's nothing more dangerous than an artist. That's why they canceled the poets coming to the White House last year. See, they thought they were going to come and talk about dead poets. They said, oh my God, what have we done? These people are going to advocate for humanity. We can't have that happen. Solzhenitsyn. And who, if not the writers, are to express condemnation, not only for their own bankrupt rulers, but also for their own society, whether it be a matter of its craven humiliation or its complacent weakness. People will ask, what can literature do in the face of the pitiless assault of open violence? Well, let us not forget that violence does not have its own separate existence. It is, in fact, incapable of having it. It is invariably interwoven with the lie and capitalizes the lie. Violence has nothing with which to cover itself except the lie. And the lie has nothing to stand on other than violence. Once a people has proclaimed violence as their method, they must inexorably select the lie as their principle. Let me read that one more time. Once a people have proclaimed violence as their method, they must inexorably select the lie as their principle. Simple is the ordinary courage courageous human beings act of not participating in the lie, of not supporting false actions. What their stand says is, so be it that this takes place in the world, that it even reigns in the world. But let it not be with my complicity. Writers and artists have a greater opportunity to conquer the lie. In battle with the lie, art has always been victorious, always wins out, visibly, incontrovertibly, for all. The lie can stand up and win out over much in this world, not over art. Please come to this.